This is our first teleconference or teleseminar, and we just kind of did this spur of the moment, sent out an email actually today, and had a lot of people registered. We're going to go ahead and get started. My name is Larry Goins, and as a lot of you know, I'm with Financial Help Services in Metroliner Rio up here in Charlotte, and we do hard money loans and buy and sell about 5 to 10 houses a month. And some of them we wholesale, some of them we retail, and some of them we buy and fix up and sell. What we've started wanting to do is to start having a weekly teleconference. And someone sent me a great email today with a great idea. Is Daniel Shortage on the line? He signed up for the teleseminar, but he mentioned that we should probably do this after 9 o'clock when the rates go down. I thought that was a pretty good idea. So we're going to go ahead and get started. Mike, are you still on the line?
Yes.
Good, good. Michael, how about you introduce yourself and tell them a little bit about you?
Okay, I'm Mike Ivey. I've been in real estate for about 13 years. I buy and sell property. I buy it to hold it and rent it. Have approximately, well, over 30 units that I have. I also have commercial property, and I just mainly try to accumulate good stuff and rent out the better stuff that I have, and maybe just sell for cash flow some of the other units that, you know, are not as maintenance-free as the ones that I keep.
How do you go about determining that, Mike?
Well, when I come up on a property, I like to, the ones that pretty much I'm going to keep, I look for all brick. You know, if it's got vinyl on it, that's good also. But I'm just looking for basically the outside to be pretty much maintenance-free to where there's not a lot of fix-up cost.
Right.
On the outside, time and time again, like, you know, with wood, it can rot and weather, and you got to paint it and all that good stuff. So I just look for stuff that I'm going to keep be real strong on the outside, structurally sound, and that's the ones that we hold on to.
You know, that's a good point. I like to, the ones that I keep, I like a 3-bedroom, 1.5-bath brick ranch.
Right.
That's my favorite kind of house.
Well, that's the easiest thing to maintain. Those brick will last as long as you want to last to pay it off. Still have something good and sound.
Exactly. In fact, I used to – I don't like the real old houses, although sometimes I buy them. I used to say I didn't want anything any older than me, but that didn't work out too well. I ended up leaving a lot of deals on the table. How did you get started in real estate, Mike?
I got started with an accountant who told me I was paying too much in taxes and I needed to do something with some money. So I had a buddy of mine, and he said, you know, let's buy some houses. So we just went out on a whim and bought 4 houses in the first 2 months.
Wow, that's pretty strong.
And those... in fact, those 4 houses, as of today, are paid for. I still have them.
Wow.
And they're just cash flowing.
And that was about 18 years ago?
No, they had most of those I did. The first ones I did was the owner finance group.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was an old fella, and he had enough, and he said he would finance it so he didn't get killed on his taxes. So he did 10-year notes on them with me.
Uh-huh.
And we just paid them and got them down to where they were small and just paid them off and started having the income.
Now, some people may not know, and explain a little bit about this. Why would he want to take back a note and have you make payments over time, and how did that help him out on his taxes?
Well, with the if you take a big hit like that, say it's, you know, in his case, it was $120,000.
For all 4 properties?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And that would have put him in a higher bracket, and he would have been paying capital gains, and it would have just, you know, and he already depreciated him all the way out.
Right.
So he didn't have anything there. He just, you know, his options were to take the money and pay the taxes, or he can finance them to me, and he did. I think the rate was 9% when he did it.
Uh-huh.
So he just became the bank. He
right.
made the money. He made the interest. And he had an income every month for, you know, 10 years.
Right.
And he didn't. He was only had to pay a little bit of taxes versus one big, huge chunk that takes away from your money.
That's true. And just to take that one step further, whenever you depreciate a property, you can actually depreciate it down. What you're doing is you're depreciating your cost basis in the property. So after you have a property for so many years, your cost basis in it is zero after you've depreciated it down. So if you sold that property, if he sold it for, what did you say, 120?
Right.
He sold it for 120. If he would have done a cash sale, he would have had to pay taxes on $120,000 long-term capital gains. Is that right?
That's correct.
But by taking what they call an installment sale, which is an IRS term, what he could do is he could claim the income from the sale of the property as he received it. Like, for example, what was your payment on that, Mike?
I think my payment was, around
$900 a month.
Roughly.
So he really only claimed $10,800 a year.
Right.
$10,800 a year for the next, each year for the next, whatever it was, 10 or 15 years.
Right. Plus
until it was paid off.
You made the interest off of it, too.
Exactly.
And the thing that I like about the owner financing is it eliminates having trouble when you go to want to borrow money.
Uh-huh.
An owner finance doesn't show up anywhere.
That's true.
So
that's strong.
You don't have a bunch of, you know, money that you have to offset due to the fact you got these loans out because they just don't show up. So it enables you to do more.
Right.
But you don't have to say, well, I got, you know, this loan and this loan and this loan. You can roll right through and do your regular loan.
Exactly. Even a lot of people, they do strictly owner finance. And I know some people that just do that. They don't like to go to the banks or deal with the banks or lenders or mortgage companies.
Right. That's my,
of course, that don't help me any, but, you know.
those are hard to find.
That is true.
Everybody gets worried, you know, that somebody's not going to pay and then they're back with the house. A lot of people would just, they want their money and they'll pay their taxes and they'll go on their way.
Right. Well, tell us a little bit, Mike, about what you look for in a property that you're going to, say, rent versus you're going to retail and how you determine that.
Well, when I go to a property, I like to check out the neighborhood. I like to get a feeling if the neighborhood's doing well or if I think it's, you know, it's on its way back, if its neighborhood's been flat. So I just kind of weigh those against what I have. And if I go into a neighborhood and I think it's going to do well,
right,
I would just, that may be potential for me to just rent.
Right.
Try to build the equity, just hold on to it so I can make the money in the end of the sale, because as renting is, you know, the way I put it is free money. As long as you got it rented, because somebody else is paying for it for you.
Exactly.
And you're just making money each month as long as you keep it rented.
Now, do you look for a certain amount of cash flow on each property over and above your mortgage payment, or how do you figure that?
I like to at least make $150 after my payment, taxes, and insurance.
Uh-huh.
I will go to 100, but it'll have to be a really strong property that's going to grow at a good rate.
In other words, in a better appreciating area.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. As long as it's going up, I'll make the numbers a little tighter.
Mm-hmm.
But 150 is where I like to stay.
Now, do you actually put any of your own cash in the deal? In other words, I mean, I know, you know, some properties you pay cash for and some you go and get a loan, but is this $100 to $150 a month cash flow, is this after you've fixed up the property and either refinanced it and got all your money back, or do you actually keep any of your own cash in the deal or try to pull out cash?
Well, I have several ways that I do it. Most of the ways, if I do pay cash for it, I will refinance it and pull the cash back out.
Mm-hmm.
Move on, you know, to the next one.
Right.
Have that money there.
Right.
If with the hard money loans, if I have one that has to be fixed up and it's extensive, I will borrow the hard money and normally try to get it fixed within the 30-day period.
Right.
When I'm about halfway through that fix up, I'll go ahead and start my process for the refinance.
Right.
And if my timing is good, I have 60 days there where I don't have to make any payments. And I've used the hard money, plus I've refinanced it back with the regular bank.
Right.
And there's no money, no payments being made in those 60 days.
Well, that's strong.
Yeah, so we just try. That's what we try to do.
Mm-hmm.
When we do it, and I try to set it up, because when I go look at a house and make an offer on it and that offer is accepted, I will set up one day to have the house inspected, because I do have them inspected by an inspector.
You hire a property inspector?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I do that, and all he does is structural inspection.
Uh-huh.
He does the crawl and he does the attic.
Uh-huh.
I do everything else. And on that particular day, I set up everybody I think I need when I went to the house to look at it to make the offer. Like if I need the electrician, the sheetrock guy, the plumber, I will set those up at the same time. So when we come to the property, everybody comes and I say, look, go through, check everything that you need to check. Get me a list of what you see's wrong and what needs to be done, and they will, each one of them individually will go do that, and then they will call me back later that night and say, here's the numbers, and I already have raw numbers, and I decide then if the fix-up is pretty much where I thought it was going to be.
Right.
And then I will call them back and say, we're going to do the deal. We're going to buy it and fix it up, and we're closing on Friday. So if we close on Friday, on Monday, everybody shows up on the job ready to go to work, knowing what they need, what they got to have, and we start working immediately.
Wow, you got a system down, don't you, Mike?
Yeah, they don't. We don't run back and forth with, okay, I got the house, I need a plumber, I need to do this, and I need to do that. It's already set.
You have it lined up in advance.
Yes, and then when I'm the week before I purchase it, I go ahead and get my scheduling down.
Uh huh.
So everybody knows when they're coming, what they need to do, and all they got to do is get it and get it done. And that's why we try to stay in that 30-day period, so there's no payments
right
out of pocket. We're just using their money and getting it done.
Now, let me ask you this. If you're able to get all these guys lined up and they meet you out there at the same time, you've obviously been using these guys for a while. How long does it take you to, or did it take you to find the right crew or the right team, and what do you look for in building your team of subs?
It took me about 5 years to find these guys that I have. And what I look for is I try to find guys who are maybe starting their own business that are, you know, ready to go to work.
Right.
And that are willing to, you know, stick with you through thick and thin. And once they, as they grow, you know, obviously you're going to grow too, but you want them to stick with you after they, because most of the guys I have now own their own company, but they still know that when I call, they still take care of me, you know, just like they always did. And I'm blessed to have those guys to that they are true to the word. I don't never have to go check on them or anything like that. And it's just we've kind of bonded together. And I will only try out somebody different if they come recommended, you know, by one of those guys or.
Oh, really?
Because it's not, you know, there's enough work for everybody. And it's just like my carpenter guy, he come up to me the other day and he said, you know, Mike, we got about 4 houses going on. I know this guy who's really good, who's, you know, he's wanting to get started in this. And I took him over to a house and, you know, give him a shot because after doing it so long, after about half a day, you know if somebody's going to be good or not.
That's
what
true.
They're doing. And I don't give too many, you know, third and fourth chances for somebody that don't want to show up because the key is getting it done right, and either get it up for sale or get it up for rent.
Right.
Before a whole bunch of time goes by.
Obviously, a lot of us don't have 5 years to wait to build that team. What would you recommend in trying to find the right kind of person or right kind of subs or even a general contractor? And what do you look for and what are some of the questions that you ask them and that sort of thing?
Well, I'm a true believer in referrals. I like people. Most, if somebody's going to refer somebody to you, you know, is a good thing. And I just try to find people who, well, you know, pretty much by talking to somebody, if they, you know, they'll tell you they can do it and everything, but actually doing it, you got to test them out. So I try to test them all out and see what they're capable of doing and how they're gonna, you know, handle me with what I've got going on.
Right.
And see how they kind of take that and. If they're just, you know, wanting to line up a bunch of work and have 3 or 4 jobs going, I kind of check that out, too, because, you know, I want them on my job and I want them there till they're done so we can get finished.
Yeah,
so a
exactly.
guy that's got a whole bunch going on, you know, he's going to be, you know, he may become short on help or he may be at the other job, depending on who is paid.
Right.
Who's paying at that point is pretty much where they're going to be.
Right.
And that's, you know, so I got to kind of just look out for that. And it's just, it's gut instinct. I mean, just keeping an eye on them and knowing if they're going to be good for you or not. If you can work well together, it's a good thing. And I refer a lot of my guys around to new investors to help them out and they get started.
Do you not worry about somebody else taking up a lot of their time and them leaving you behind?
No, I don't, not really. It's there's a lot of good guys out there, and you just have to kind of weed through them. But the ones I have, you know, I tell them, you know, hey, I don't mind giving you work, but, you know, take care of me first.
Sure.
If I have something come up, and they usually do. They're pretty... If you find somebody good and you're paying them good, they're pretty loyal to you.
That's a really good point.
If you nickel and dime somebody to death, they want to move on to the next guy that they can make the money from where they don't have the, you know, they're not. My guys, they really can't say that I nickel and dime them to death because I tell them that I say, hey, just take care of me, and I'll get you other jobs that you can, you know, if you need to make up on somebody else.
But it's,
they do take care of me, and we just established a good relationship. And I still, every now and again, you know, I have to look around to see, you know, who's doing what and how they're working and if, you know, somebody will benefit me. Because other investors will tell you that, you know, I use this guy, he was good, or don't use this guy. A word of mouth is a big selling point.
That's true. You know, I found, too, that every once in a while you have to, even the great people, whether you're talking about subs or you know, an appraiser or attorney or, you know, lender or whatever, they'll get lazy. You have to keep them in check.
Right.
I know a friend of mine, Fred Hoffman, one time he had a couple heating and air guys that worked for him, or a heating and air guy that worked for him. And it got to where he didn't even ask him for a price. He'd just go out there and, you know, all right, go ahead and do it. And the last three that the guy went out and checked needed to have a new heat pump. So he called the next guy that he was going to call and have him go out there and look at it. He said, no, your coils just needed to be cleaned. So when the guy called him back, said, hey, you ready for that heat pump? He said, you know, you did this to me twice, you know, third strike and you're out.
Yeah.
You know, don't do this to me anymore.
Yeah, if you get comfortable with them, they, you kind of got to mind your P's and Q's with them.
You have to keep people in check, I guess.
But, I mean, I don't, like, I've seen some of these guys that go out and they want to get, like, three prices.
Right.
I don't fool with that.
Right.
At all. I just, you know, it's just, you beat somebody up enough, they're not going to fool with you anyway.
That's absolutely true.
They know that every job they go into, they're having to price it out along with two other guys. They're going to get where they don't even show up, you know, to give you a price.
There's two other things that are just as important in as price to me, and that's good quality work and getting the job done on time.
That's it.
And like you said, you try to turn a deal in 30 days.
Right. That is the key. That's where we try to stay.
Now, do you actually do some of the work yourself?
Yes, I will. It depends on what's going on. If we've got just like one house going on,
mm-hmm.
I'll go over there and do as much as I can possibly do. I don't, you know, do electrical and plumbing and stuff like that. But as far as the other stuff, like adding a closet or adding a wall or
mm-hmm.
stuff like that, putting in the cabinets and all that stuff is stuff that I'll pretty much do myself. But I don't get into a time issue. I don't say to myself, well, you know, I can paint this house and save, you know, $1,500.
Right.
Well, by the time you paint the house, if you look at what you saved, you really didn't save anything. If you'd have a painter come in there and he painted in 2 days, and it took you 10.
So there's not really a lot of advantages to doing it yourself.
Right. If you can, you know, if you put the dollars to it, because I know a lot of guys that say, well, I can go in this house and I'll have this thing fixed up by myself and not spend any money, and I'll have it ready for sale in 4 months.
Yeah.
Well, I try to have that baby on the market and have marketed it for 3 months, you know, if not sold it in that time frame, while they're still working on theirs.
Right.
And then you turn your money over quicker and you're able to do more. You're not just sitting, letting that, I mean, because even if you pay cash for it, your money is sitting, not drawing any interest that it could be drawing no matter where you put it.
You're absolutely right.
So you're losing daily money.
It's a lost opportunity.
Right.
You have to look at it that way. Even if it's your own money and you're paying cash, you have to look at the better deal theory.
Because if you had it somewhere else, you'd be making money.
Exactly.
And if you're painting them walls every day, it's costing you every day to get it done.
That's true. And, you know, some people that won't, you know, do maybe one deal at a time or whatever, and they'll buy it and go out there and fix it up. You know, and that's okay if that's your goal. But if your goal is to, you know, do two or three a month and build a portfolio or buy fix up in retail, you can't make any money holding a paintbrush.
Right.
You make your money in the deal.
And plus, too, you don't have many deals that come your way because they'll say, well, you know, Larry's over there working on that house, so he won't buy another one until he's finished with that one.
Right.
Whereas if you were, you know, if people knew you were turning houses, they'd be sending you houses because they knew you could do the deal, and you just keep rolling, and that makes you even more money.
That's true. Mike, let's jump up a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about how you determine how much you're going to offer for a house?
Well, what I'll do is when I see the house and go take a look at it, I normally have the comps of the neighborhood with me.
And where do you pull those from?
I'll pull those off of Realtor.com.
Uh-huh.
Or I actually have a realtor that I work with. He will pull them. And I try to get a gauge of my price range when I go to look at it.
Uh-huh.
And if I'm looking at a house that I think will do well and is priced decent, I will eliminate the price and try to work with my numbers on what I need that I'm comfortable with for that particular house.
And not even take into consideration what they're asking for.
Right, and then I'll take that price and look at what they're asking for.
Uh-huh.
And I'm probably going to be either a lot low or I'll be right in line with where they're at.
Right.
Because they've done the comps, too.
Uh-huh.
And it just, where that number comes in, I try to just make an offer based on that, whether my offer is lower than asking price or it's, I come in at asking price or if I pay more.
Yeah, that's. I was going to ask you about that because you told me just the other day that the last, two or three you bought, you actually paid more than what the house was listed for. Is that right?
That's correct.
Tell us how that worked.
Well, I went and looked at the particular house that I was telling you about. I went and looked at it, and I did the comps and everything, and the neighborhood is really strong, and it's really coming back. And they had the house listed at 35. And it was a three-bedroom, one-bath, and plus two, you have a good bit of competition now bidding on it also.
Right.
So I did my numbers on it, and without the price in there, I came up with about 38.
Right.
And that I could be comfortable with,
and
you know, if I was to purchase it. So I made the offer of 38, and I did buy the house. And I bought it for roughly $1,000 more than where the other guy was that was closest to me.
Okay, so it was kind of a multiple bid situation.
Right, and but still, I figured that my numbers came out exactly where I needed for them to be at 38, and I was comfortable with that. And with the banks nowadays and dealing with these foreclosures, they will get those offers in at a rapid rate.
Right.
And then tell everybody to come back with their highest and best, and they will play ball with the highest guy.
Uh-huh.
So I just eliminate all that and say, here's what I'm willing to do, where I'm comfortable with. It's a, you know, if I get it, I get it. And they came back with that one and said, you know, you bought your house. You got 10 days to get your inspections done, and that's when I go to work.
Wow, that's pretty strong.
And we did one other one where we went over $500 from what they were asking, and we were able to get it because the next guy below me was at asking price.
Uh-huh.
So I just nudged up $500 because I wanted the house, but you know, it didn't matter to me at all if I got it or not. So I just bumped it up a little bit to, you know, to still be safe.
Sure.
Very safe. So,
what's the most you want to have in a property as far as investment to value? In other words, like 70% of after repaired value, or 80 or 85?
70% is my magic number.
Uh-huh.
That or less.
Yeah, that's what we sell our houses, that we wholesale to other investors.
Right.
We have to be able to buy them cheap enough to where we can resell them to investors, including hard money rehab closing cost, rehab cost, and the purchase price at 70% of after repaired value.
Well,
and at that, you can always refinance the deal at 75 or 80 if the loan amount is over $70,000, which is now what most lenders require to do an 80% cash-out refi with no seasoning.
Right.
You can actually put money in your pocket on the refi and then rent it out at a positive cash flow, like you said, $150 to $200 a month.
Right. You're pretty positive if you've got a rental that you've got done and completed and you got 70%, you're in pretty good shape in the rental market, making some good profit.
That's true. And the other advantage, too, is if you're in the resale market for retail, you can keep your purchase price to your retail buyer at appraised value.
Right.
And then you have room enough to pay their closing cost, buy right. their rate down, or, hey, how about carrying back a 10% seller second? You know, I mean, that's anything to help get the deal closed.
And you have to be safe. You have to do your own homework yourself. Don't, you know, most guys go on what somebody tells them, what a realtor tells them it's worth, but it's you have to do your own homework so you don't get bit in the end over what somebody's told you they think the house is worth.
That's true. Nobody's going to do it like you do for yourself.
Right, because you're the one that has to pay. You're the one that has to do the numbers. You're the one that has to be comfortable with what you're getting and what you're doing so you can make the money that you want to make.
That's true. Do you do your own property managing?
I have two different property managers right now at this time because I'm in the process of, I have my regular guy that I use, but I have these other guys referred to me by several people, and I put the numbers to it, and it's and they saved me some money. So I've been giving them a little bit here and there to see how they handle things and if we're going to be able to work together and how they, you know, treat the tenants and how they handle everything in certain situations. So I'm slowly learning about them to make a change one way or the other.
Is there anything in particular you look for in a property manager?
A property manager is a rent collector.
Right.
That's pretty much their deal. I mean, every house that I have up for rent, I put up for rent myself.
Uh-huh.
Their sign's usually right beside mine, but I advertise every house everywhere I can.
And they're okay with that?
Yes. I mean, the key is getting it rented.
Yeah.
But if you've got a property manager who has 300 houses, they're not going to be sitting in your yard every time somebody calls and wants to look at the house.
That's a good point.
You as an individual can make it easy for a tenant, you know, just by saying, you know, when do you want to see it, and driving over there and meeting them.
Right.
And talking to them about it and showing it to them. They're more apt to deal with you versus going to the property manager, picking up a key, going to look at the house, and then going back to them to drop the key off.
Uh-huh.
So if you're there, when I go, I take my applications with me, and I meet with them, and they can look at the house. If they want to fill out an application, I help them fill it out, and I take that information. Call the property manager guy with it, and I say, here's the information. They run the credit. They call me back and say, you know, she checks out okay.
Uh-huh.
And I'll call her back, and I'll tell her I'll meet you back at the house with your keys and the lease.
Right.
We'll sign you up, and you'll give me some money, and we'll move you right in.
So you basically just use the property manager to collect the rents.
Right.
That's pretty strong. You know, Mike, I never thought about that. That's a great idea.
You know, they do advertise for you and everything, but you got to look at it from their standpoint of view. I mean, they don't have somebody that they've hired to go show property and
right.
do all this different stuff. I mean, you have to pretty much do stuff like that yourself. Some guys say, well, just let them handle everything. And then you talk to them 3 months later, they're complaining.
Uh-huh.
Well, why haven't my house rented? You know, my first question to them is, well, what have you done for yourself?
Right.
Well, I hired a property manager to do that. Well, that's all good and well, but you're one of 150 or 200 that he has. You're not going to get that special treatment unless you do it yourself.
You know, that's one of the things that always scared me about having a property manager lease my property is they have their sign in my yard, And when they get a call, I don't know about it, and I'm worried that they're trying to rent one of their own properties or somebody else that's down their back a little bit heavier about getting their property rented when the person actually called about my house.
Well, that's, you're exactly right, because in as long as I've been doing this, you people will deal with an individual before they'll deal with the property manager.
Uh-huh.
If they have that option.
Right.
They would rather deal with somebody one-on-one than to, you know, just deal with whoever's particularly answering the phone that day at the property manager. They want to know somebody. They want to be able to call somebody. And that's pretty much how I kind of present it. I mean, they know me, and they know that, you know, they're dealing with me now. But I tell them, I say, well, look, I turn this over to the property manager, and here's the girl that, you know, you'll be dealing with. Here's your name. Here's your number.
Uh-huh.
And they, it kind of gets them comfortable in, you know, a situation where normally it's just like a machine. You walk into the office, you get your application, you go pick up this information from the police department, you go do whatever they need for you to do, and it's just like a machine. You don't feel like, you know, you're being treated like a person.
That's true.
So you, if you do that yourself, you'll have great success in renting your properties just by putting a little effort and doing things that are simple yourself.
That's a good point. One of the little things that I do whenever I have a property for rent, everybody that calls, I tell them the same time to meet me over there.
Right.
And if I have five people that say they're going to meet me over there, three people will show up. And they're all running around, you know, hoping that the other one doesn't get it and trying to corner me in the back room somewhere.
Yeah, that's it. They want the one-on-one attention.
That's true.
And that's just the way they work. And
plus, it's a good time management tool, too.
Yeah. I mean, that, and plus, too, if you do it that way, I guarantee you they have one friend that's going to need a place to rent.
Right.
They're going to call you.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to say, well, look, this guy took care of me, and, you know, he was super nice, and I didn't have to, you know, do all the running back and forth. He showed me the property. He brought everything to the house and everything, and that's what people are looking for. I mean, they got to work. They got to work 8 hours, and they got, you know, 45 minutes to an hour for lunch. And
right.
With Charlotte traffic nowadays, you can't – how far can you get?
That's true.
An hour, you can't get across town and back anymore.
That's about the truth.
If you have somebody that's, you know, if I'm meeting them at 6 or 6:30, that's when they all usually want to meet.
Yeah, after work.
It's convenient for them. Everything's there. They don't have to do nothing but, you know, get their application in, and I check out everything and put them in, or, you know, tell them that, well, I got something else for them that's not as expensive.
Right.
And that way I'm still showing them my property. So the property manager guy, if they don't work out there, he's going to show them something else, and it may not be mine.
Right.
Because that may not be on his mind. So as long as I keep my hand in it, I can keep showing them what I got, and hopefully they'll find something.
Right.
They won't. If I don't have anything, I say, well, look, they've got a list over there. Go over there and get the list and see if you can find something, you know, that you want. I'll tell them that I've been helping you, and, you know, you'll be pretty much approved, and that'll be it. So
that's
still
good.
Getting the attention they want.
Now, even though you have a property manager collecting the rent, who makes the repairs on a month-to-month basis if there's some kind of little repair needs to be made on the property?
The way I'm set up, anything less than $100, they automatically take care of.
Oh, really?
Anything over 100, they call me, and I will determine by what they tell me is wrong if I need for them to get one of their guys, or if I'm going to go take care of it. If it's anything over $400, they will call me with the repair plus an estimate from their guy, and I can determine by what he's charging me if that's fair or not. And you know, with the management company having so many properties, normally their guys are pretty fair with the amount of work they're getting from them.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of pretty much you learn over time what costs what. And if somebody calls you and said, you know, the guy's going, our guy can put the hot water heater in for, you know, $500.
Right.
You know, you run those numbers through your mind about what the hot water costs and what the labor is and the time that you would have involved in it. You know, more likely you'll just say, go ahead and let your guy do it, and it's done that day. And you don't have, you know, a headache. So I keep my hands in every repair unless it's
less than
$100.
That way you can keep control over it.
Right, if the toilet's messed up or something like that.
You know, you and I were talking the other day, and you told me about this program. I thought it was awesome that you do. The free rent program. Tell everybody about that.
I do free rent for 1 month. It is the 13th month. And they have to stay the full term to get that 13th month free. And in that 13th month, we sign a lease for another year.
So they're in it for 12 months, and the 13th month is free as long as they sign the second year lease.
That's correct.
Is that the way you do it?
Right.
But now you promote it. I mean, you have signs that you put out on a property that say that, right?
Yes. That's the free rent sign, just like any advertising, they're going to call, and that's going to be their first question. And
what's the gimmick?
Yeah. Like all of us do. But I sign them up for a year, and that, you know, and it's been really successful because, you know, that month I don't have, you know, any money for that particular property, but it's rented. I mean, I'd rather have it rented versus not renting because then I'm spending the money anyway. And plus two, if they don't stay, there's nothing lost there anyway.
Right. That's true.
If they do stay, then I've more than likely got another year out of them, and I just do it over the course of those 2 years. And I do it on properties that I really think that are going to be hard to rent if there's a lot in the neighborhood for rent. And
right.
I just kind of weigh it on that.
Mm-hmm.
And normally I put the rent sign up when I'm almost finished with the house to see what kind of activity I have before it's done to determine, you know, if I'm going to have to rent it that way or what other avenues I'm going to need to go down to get it rented.
Right. Mike, how about telling us a little bit about what are some of the other things that you do to, I know you said you get an inspection on the property and then you meet your guys out there to do a takeoff on it. What are some other things like termite inspection or survey or, you know, dumpster fees or, you know, any other things that you figure into the cost, including carrying costs when you're looking at a deal?
Well, my two main things that I do and I do on every property is the inspection and the termite letter. And if you find an inspector that you stay with, your prices will get better.
Uh-huh.
You know, the more you do. My guy, for $150, he'll crawl the house from one end to the other. He takes digital pictures. He gives me a full report. He does the same thing in the attic,
uh-huh,
and the roof and everything.
Uh-huh.
So I actually have a full report that comes with pictures, so I don't have to crawl under the house and do all that stuff. And then the termite guy will do his inspection and give me his report, and that is $60. So for $210, I've got the house inspected.
Uh-huh.
And plus two, if I find something wrong that I really don't like, I have justification not to purchase the house. I'm not just calling the bank up and saying, look, you know, I think there's something wrong with the seal. You know, I don't want the house.
You can send them the report.
Right. I just send them the report. I highlight the problem that I've been noted from an individual who inspects houses, and I don't feel like, you know, that I'm interested in the house due to that fact.
Right.
And plus,
you know,
they know the codes, and it gives you a different look at it.
You know, another thing, too, Mike, is I don't know, I'm sure you've used this before, too, but you can use that as a negotiating tool.
Yeah.
If you can get to a happy medium price, knowing that there's more work, at least get it in paper, get it on paper, get a deposit up, get them anticipating a close, whether it be a bank or a seller or whatever. And then when the inspection comes back, it needs all this work. You knew it needed to begin with, and you send it over and say, hey, you know, the best I can do, I'm going to have another $3,500 off.
That's correct.
But you've already, what I call, got them in the glue. You know, you get them in the glue and get them anticipating a close, and then, you know, they're like, oh, okay, all right, you know.
Well, that's true. I mean, because you've got, you know, the banks, they, you know, if you're dealing with the bank, they haven't seen the house. The only thing they've seen is pictures.
Uh-huh.
And if you've got justification from somebody other than yourself, it makes it more
credible.
Realistic, like, yeah, incredible. So, I mean, it's, you actually can say, here, you know, this guy does this for a living, he's licensed, and
sure,
you know, he's found a bad seal all the way across the front, and, you know, seal's $125 a foot, and here's what we're looking at.
Right.
You know, can you at least split it with us or something? I mean, it is a good negotiating tool. It's money that's well spent. I mean, it's just like the good way to explain it is you wouldn't spend your money on a stock unless you researched it just a little bit to see what it was doing and what it was going to do.
That's true.
Well, if you're going to spend $40,000 or $50,000, why not spend $210,000 to research it to where you know pretty much all there is to know about it? I mean, all houses have hidden damage, but it's still $210 well spent for your investment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to sneak up behind you when you crawl under there to work on something and see something else.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is money well spent. But, you know, those things can be intimidating, too.
Right.
With all the, you know, everything that they put into them. But that's good information.
Right.
I think it's important, too, to note that if you get an inspection from a property inspector, there's going to be things on that inspection that, you know, that may make you nervous or may scare you, but a lot of that stuff is easily repairable, or some of it is really irrelevant. Wouldn't you agree?
Exactly. Well, if I do a house to resell, to retail it, when I'm done, I will get it inspected.
So that way, you know, you don't have to worry about anything with your buyer.
Right. I have no...
It's done.
And I tell the buyer, I say, you know, here's my inspection report. Here's what was on there. We fixed everything. If you want to get it inspected, you're more than welcome. I would love for you to get it inspected. But we just go through that process because nowadays people want to move in, put their underwear in the drawer, and sit in the lazy boy and not have anything to do.
So
if it's inspected and fix everything, I mean, because, you know, you miss stuff and somebody else come in there sees things that maybe you didn't see. And
that's true.
It's an easy fix. You're going to, if they pay, you know, to get it inspected, you're going to more than likely have to fix some of it or something. So why not just go ahead and nip it in the bud and
be done with it.
That's it. Just say, here it is.
It's a comfort level, too, for the buyer.
Exactly. If they walk into one of my houses, they get everything they need to know about the house in that report. It's peace of mind.
Yeah, that's a great point.
For both people.
That's true. Mike, how about for the last few minutes, maybe we can take a couple questions if anybody wants to ask some questions. Is there anybody that would like to ask a question? Sure.
Hey, it's Glenn Woodfin from Spartanburg. How are you?
Glenn Woodfin, the world-famous real estate entrepreneurial mogul.
I appreciate you letting South Carolina Hicks get on this line.
Anything to you, Glenn.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, I've heard these techniques about when you are interviewing. You get three stacked up at the house, you're showing the house. Do you charge for the rental application? Some people have even heard make it a profit center. They want 20 applications on one house, and maybe they only needed three or four.
I personally do not.
I don't either.
I don't either. I don't feel right about it.
Yeah, it's not good business as far as I'm concerned.
I would rather feel like somebody's gets comfortable with me and not thinking that I'm, you know, they have to pay me for that just for me to check their credit. I've never done it and never been able to do it.
You know, it's kind of true. There's even a lot of commercial lenders out there that will do the same thing when you apply for a commercial loan. They charge you an application fee, and sometimes it's several thousand dollars, never anticipating closing your loan for you. And it's kind of the same principle, but no, I don't do that, and I don't think it's right to, not at all.
I've done the three stack thing. It's kind of fun having, you know, a few people sitting around all wanting to buy, you know, rent your house, but at the same time, it's kind of awkward on your part as well. As
right,
just wondering, how do you handle that? Do you just say, yeah, I'll get to you in a minute, or
well, what I do is I stand at the front door myself and have them come in, welcome them, and say, just make yourself at home, look around, let me know if you have any questions, and I walk off by myself somewhere. It may be outside, or it may be in one of the back bedrooms or in the living room or something by myself, and the ones that are interested will come looking for me. And it's kind of funny. It's almost like they end up waiting in line. It's kind of like, you know, everybody wants what they can't have. And if there are two or three people, you know, I always try to, another little thing that I use is I show up about 5 or 10 minutes late. So that way,
nobody knows what's going on. But
nobody
you,
know, you have three or four people there looking around and, you know, do you own this? No, I'm just here to look at the house. Oh, well, me too. So that works pretty good.
Because I've gotten in situations where, you know, I obviously from my attitude am showing a willingness to stay and talk to everybody, but I've tended to stay with one person for a few minutes, and then that person will go, well, are they serious about it too? You know, and I said, well, I haven't talked to them yet, but
they're still here.
But I like what you're saying, Larry. That's a good idea, just to kind of stay neutral and let them. You know, like many times in business, we're only looking for people that are looking. Obviously, the one that wants it will rise to the top
right
there. So it takes some of the awkwardness about it.
Well, I know we only have a few minutes left, but I've been blessed in the sense that I've gotten to the point where I don't want anybody to think I'm trying to, you know, slam them into something or force them into buying something from me or, you know, slam them into a lease or a contract or anything. You know, I would rather just kind of keep it low key and let them seek me out and, you know, just have fun with it and just always do the right thing with it.
Well, plus everything else said on the phone was good as far as your integrity and stuff. I was very comfortable with how y'all handle this.
Well, thanks. It is our very first one, and I do hope to do some, you know, every week. I'm planning on trying to get it set up on Wednesday night. I think maybe what I will do, though, is wait until after 9 o'clock. What does anybody think about that?
That's good.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. And
after Knots Landing.
Yeah, I hear you.
I've never seen that show in my life. It just came into my mind.
Oh, no. Yeah, after Seinfeld reruns.
Never seen any of those either.
Glenn, I'm going to get you on here and interview you next.
Yeah, okay. I'll tell you how a guy can spend 10 years in jail and get out and do a deal in 1 week.
Easy now. well, I'm sure they're about ready to cut us off. I appreciate everybody signing in tonight and appreciate you listening. I hope you were able to get something out of it, and we'll send out a notice next week with a new number and PIN number to get in. We'll have another one. And thanks a lot, and everybody have a good evening.
Thanks. You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hi, this is Larry Goins, and I would like to thank you for listening to this audio program. I would also like to remind you to please visit our website at www.larrygoins.com. L-A-R-R-Y GOINS.com for other information, as well as we have a link for freebies. We have articles that you can read. I would like to share with you that we also offer one-day training events for basic real estate investing, and we also have three-day boot camps, as well as the boot camp in a box, which contains the complete three-day boot camp on audio CD as well as DVD video. Please visit our website for the location and schedule of our one-day and three-day boot camps coming up. We also have a home study course called The Complete Insider's Guide to Financing for Investors, which consists of over 500 pages in the manual and 10 audio CDs, as well as 2 forms discs and other products and services as well. We also offer personal coaching and mentoring, so whatever your needs may be, please feel free to give us a call. If you are a real estate group, investor association, mortgage company owner, or other organization and would like to have either myself or Wendy Sweet or Leon Humphrey speak at your group about real estate and finance and investing, please feel free to give us a call. Our direct office number is 803-831-0056. I am at extension 304. Wendy Sweet is 310. I'd also like to remind you that we also offer traditional financing as well as hard money and rehab loans for investors. Please visit our website there at www.financialhelpservices.com. Thank you very much for your business. We sincerely appreciate it. And please remember, our mission is to put people and principles in front of profits. When we do that, everybody profits. Thank you and have a great day.